Hey there, my name is Mei Ling. I'm a certified life coach, trauma trained practitioner, and options trader. And welcome to my podcast, Finding Freedom in the Hologram. Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 5 of season 6. Now, if you've been following this season, you know I've been using professional athletes because their commitment, dedication, and the way they train their mental mindset are all very relatable to trading. In fact, if we take anything seriously, any challenge seriously in our lives that we really want to move toward to, something that we really want to achieve and accomplish, anybody can look towards professional athletes because they have so much to teach us. Now, some of you might have also noticed that the past 4 episodes, or the first 4 episodes, have all featured athletes that are male. And you might be wondering, where the hell are the female athletes mailing? Well, today we are talking about FloJo, Florence Griffith Joyner. Now, it depends on what year you're born. Because FloJo was born in 1959 and she peaked in her career in 1988. So if you were born past 1988, if you're born in 1990s, you know, no shade if you don't know who she is. But let me tell you what this amazing woman did, and please look her up on YouTube because I think you will be blown away. So FloJo, what is she famous for? She's famous for being the fastest woman on the planet because she set world record times of 10.49 seconds for the 100 meters and 21.34 seconds for the 200 meters that still stand today. And not only did she do that, she was a pocket rocket, right? She was so fast. She did it in style. She had 6.5-inch acrylic nails, long, flowing, luscious hair, a full face of makeup, and self-designed race kits with asymmetrical one-legged bodysuits with lace detailing and color-blocked bikini bottoms. Now, if you're like, hold on. What are we talking about? What sport is this? It was track. Running, sprinting. Now, if you're thinking, there is no way I've ever seen somebody wear that at a race on TV, please look up FloJo on YouTube. Then you'll see exactly what I mean, because this woman had style. And she used to say, dress good to look good to feel good, and feel good to run fast. Right? Because she was making a fashion statement on the track. She was making a statement in 2 ways, super powerful. 1, she outperformed anybody else. 2, she dressed and she stood out. So she wasn't trying to blend in. She wasn't trying to play small. She was just expressing herself fully and enjoying it. So not only was she training to be the best in terms of the competitions that she entered, the races that she entered, she also felt free to express herself fully. If you were a sprinter or you loved watching track and field during the 1980s, you couldn't ignore FloJo. She was too good to ignore. And she really inspired an entire generation of athletes, right, who are still chasing her winning combo of record-setting performances. So FloJo came from very humble beginnings. Now, her middle name is Dolores, so she was known as Dee Dee to her friends and family, apparently. You know, this is my research. She was born in LA in 1959, and she was the 7th of 11 kids. 7 of 11 kids. Now, her mom was a seamstress and her dad an electrician, and her parents divorced when she was just 6 years old. And, you know, back then, the mom, well, even now, most mothers would get the custody for the kids, and the mother moved the children to the Jordan Downs housing project in the Watts section of LA. Now, obviously, I'm not from the US, neither do I know LA. So apparently, Watts section was meant to be really rough in the 60s. I don't know if it's any different now. Maybe you guys can tell me. But that's where she grew up with a mom, with a single mom. Now, FloJo actually developed an interest in sports and fashion from a very, very young age. And it's funny because she grew up with a lot of brothers and she used to say, like newspapers quoted her, right? She said, "My brothers, they were very competitive. They would knock me down and I couldn't cry." She was quoted as saying, right? And if she cried, she was then not allowed to continue to play with them. So in this case, from a very young age, now some of you might think, "Oh no, what poor thing. She had such brothers that were bullies." But guess what? Very few people grew up where they didn't argue with their siblings. And in this particular case, it helped Flojo because she started to develop a very competitive age growing up with these brothers. And she learned how to be resilient. She learned how to play the game because she wanted to continue to play. And so she learned how to control her emotions, right? She didn't cry, even though she wanted to. And this is how she has learned to go through life. When there is hardship, she's like, "Right, no crying, suck it up. What can I do now? What can I do so I can play the game and beat them at their own game?" So this was Flojo's philosophy. And in terms of her clothing and the statements that she made with fashion, she actually started experimenting with sewing her own clothes from the age of 7 onwards. And she didn't just start with track and field, you know. She was very athletic and she played basketball, volleyball, football. And then she ran track for the very first time. And it was so clear that she had just natural God-given talent. And she won the Jesse Owens National Youth Games 2 years in a row as a 14 and 15-year-old. And at Jordan High School in LA, she set school records in the long jump and the sprints. So she is multi-talented when it comes to all sports. I'm pretty sure, even though I've never seen her play basketball or volleyball, I'm pretty sure she would be very coordinated. But it was track where she really shone. She convinced her high school relay teammates to pair long tights with their track uniforms. So she wasn't afraid to stand out. She didn't believe in playing small. She was like, "Hey, not only do I want to win the race, I want to look good while winning it." And you gotta admire that, right? You gotta admire the spirit in a woman. Or the spirit in anybody, not just a woman. So when she was in a state meet, that's when she caught the eye of Cal State Northridge coach Barb Kersey, who would change her life. So I want to pause here for a moment and really register and think about this. All the athletes that I have mentioned in this season, and most power athletes, the ones that are in the halls of fame for their various sporting events, all of them had amazing coaches who could see their talent from afar and knew, "Wow, this person could be a winner. I'm going to help them get there," right? Because you can have talent, but if that talent isn't nurtured, if that talent is not allowed to flourish and you don't train it, you don't have discipline, you don't channel that energy, you don't channel that talent, it can be wasted. You know, and I'm going to go further on how Flojo, she had a lot of obstacles in her way. It wasn't a smooth ride. It wasn't something that was just easy for her. You can see that she took breaks from competing, but still her coach didn't give up on her, which is how she ended up going to the Olympic Games in Seoul, in Korea, in South Korea, and she won all those medals. As an example, despite Flojo's success on the track, there was a point where she actually dropped out of school for financial reasons, and then she worked as a bank teller to earn money for her family. Now you would think that that would probably never happen, right? If somebody obviously has talent, people, usually there would be funding. I'm not sure in terms of US high schools what the case is, but Flojo, is her record still stands today. So if back then there wasn't much funding, much scholarships, much money to finance her, and the fact that she had to drop out of school, right? Just think about that. But she didn't let that deter her, you know? So Barb Kersey had moved on to an assistant coaching position at UCLA, and from there, he helped her secure financial aid. Think about this. She didn't go, "Oh, I drop off school. I'm a bank teller now. I've lost all hope. There's no more chances for me. I'm now working and I need to support my family. Boo me. I have so much regrets. I never reached my full potential. No. She kept reaching out and she kept in contact with Bob Kersey. And she was available to receive support. She didn't have too much pride to say, no, I can't go back. She goes, okay, thank you very much. She wasn't too proud to receive support. So when she trained with Bob Kersey again, having secured financial aid at UCLA, she nearly made the Olympic team. So Bob Kersey was known for his expertise in coaching sprinters. And apparently he had very innovative training methods. Now, the articles that I've searched didn't actually go into the methods that her coach used, but he definitely helped Flojo refine her technique and improve her speed and develop her athletic abilities to reach their full potential. So under his guidance and his coaching, Flojo achieved significant success. So she was breaking all these world records and winning multiple Olympic medals. Now, it all started in a 1982 NCAA title in the 200 meters. And then in a 1983 NCAA title in the 400 meters. And then in UCLA, she just won back-to-back national team titles. So once she got the training, she gained momentum. She's like, okay, I've won this. So she slowly is climbing the ranks, right? She slowly was climbing the ranks. And not only that, she graduated from UCLA with a degree in psychology and placed fourth in the 200 meters at the World Championships the same summer. So, for those of you out there who believe that in order to be a successful trader, you got to sacrifice something in life, that's not necessarily true. Flojo, she dropped out of school, managed to get back to school, finish and complete her degree, and still place fourth in the World Championships. Like, you are still on the world stage and people are, sitting up and noticing you. So her mindset is like, there are no limits. I can have this and I can have that. I can have two things. It doesn't have to be, I can only have this or that. It's not either or. In her mind, she was like, I can have everything. It's possible. So under Bob Kersey's coaching and mentorship, which was fundamental, Flojo made her first Olympic team in 1984, and she earned a silver medal in the 200 meters in front of her hometown crowd in Los Angeles. So I haven't gone on YouTube to search that video yet, but I want to right after I record this because it's very exciting to watch her. You know, I mean, it's so fast, the race is over, but it's just really exciting to see her on the track and to see how the cameras just love her. They just follow her just because she is such a sight to be seen, such a sight to behold on the track. Now, despite her status as an Olympic medalist in track and field, she was still fighting with how people viewed her in terms of, some people still viewed her as being very amateurish. And there were other athletes who were more privileged because she didn't have financial support all the way through. Instead, she actually went into semi-retirement and she worked as a bank teller and a beautician. And she often stayed up late at night doing her friends' nails and hair, charging between $45 and $200 for intricate braids. I remember I had a flatmate who was from South Sudan. And then she was telling me all about braids, which I found truly fascinating. I didn't realize it took so much time. And I was like, wow, that's sitting in a chair for a very long time, right, to get your hair done. But she really made me appreciate how it really was an art form. So that's what Flojo did in between training. Now in 1987, she started training seriously again and won another silver medal in the 200 meters. And her relationship with time. So this woman showed so much potential, decided to semi-retire because of financial reasons, worked two jobs, then came back to training and won silver. So for those of you who wonder that it's taking you so long to be successful, either in trading or other endeavors that you're trying to train for in life, that you're trying to master in life, and you think that, wow, life happens, I got sidetracked, and then you give yourself certain excuses, I want you to pause and think. Now, do I still use that as an excuse? Or has that all been sorted out and actually, this is still a priority for me and I want to go back to it and dedicate myself to this? I just really want you guys to be fully honest with yourself. Because FloJo knew that running was a thing. She loved it. She loved training for it. She loved performing, right? Beating records. She loved proving to herself that she can do it. I'm pretty sure she loved blowing her own mind each time, right? She set a new record. Despite the fact that she didn't train continuously, she had off seasons, she had breaks, but that didn't stop her. So her relationship with time is different. Her relationship with how much success she expects to get within a certain amount of time is very different. She just did what was right for her situation. So even though her journey to success was winding, and think about that, so many people would have given up that dream. Some people would be like, okay, I'm a bank teller now. That means I'm going to eat donuts and pizza every day and think that, oh, the dream I had, that ship has long since sailed. There will be so many people, right, who would think that and then look back at pictures or think back on memories or back when they were on track and back when they were thinner and healthier and breaking records and thinking that, oh, I'm a shadow of my past self. Not FloJo. She was like, I'm going to train. I'm going to train harder and I'm going to win. 1988, Bob Kersey and FloJo's partner were training her hard and she was committed. She was apparently able to squat 320 pounds while weighing 130 pounds herself. She worked out at 4 a.m. in the morning and she watched what she ate and cut back on the late night home nail salon sessions, right? So she really prioritized her training. She was like, right, no more messing around. And she actually said to newspapers when they were like, whoa, you know, how muscular are you looking, right? She actually said, to run like a man, you have to train like a man. She was so determined to run fast and as fast as she could. Now, at the Olympic trials in Indianapolis, July 16, 1988, she had a custom Adidas one-legger purple speed suit with a turquoise pattern bikini bottom. And in the quarterfinal round of the 100 meters, FloJo ran out, demolished the field of competitors, and that's when she set the new world record. This record was so fast, and you can look up the YouTube video on this, that the on-air broadcasters assumed it was an error. No one can run that fast. The heat must be doing something to the electronics, right? One of the announcers was quoted as saying. And he also said she worked two jobs this year, apparently worked out at 2 o'clock in the morning, and now it's paid off. How admirable is that? She was determined. She was dedicated. She was committed to the cause. Now she was the darling of the Seoul Olympic Games, and she claimed 3 gold medals in the 100 meters, 200 meters, and 4x100 meter relay. Her winning time of 21.34 seconds in the 200 meters set another world record by an incredible margin. Of course, in sport, what always clouds sport? Tales of steroids, of cheating, right? It seems like almost every sport and every time something incredible happens when a world record is broken, there's always controversy, there's always rumors, people start saying things, people start suspecting things. So FloJo, you know, she wasn't immune to that either. Because it didn't help that her former UCLA teammate also claimed that he had sold Ben Johnson of Canada steroids himself. There's a lot of controversy because apparently people did it for publicity and it's like, is it true? Is it not true? But that already cast a shadow, right? It cast clouds on the sprinting scene for both US and Canadian, North American athletes at that time. And throughout all the rumors, FloJo never failed a drug test. But because she was breaking records and people had never seen someone like her on the track before who was so fast and who was attracting attention, you know, a lot of people said either it was drugs or it was wind-assisted, right? In terms of the records that she had set. And that must not have been a great feeling because it's like, why do people always have to suspect it's something else? Can't they believe that I put in the work and I deserve it and it was me who broke the record, right? Just me alone. So she had to deal with the criticism and the rumors of what the newspapers were saying, what journals were saying, what some of her former teammates were saying, and it must have been really hurtful, right? So she had a way to deal with that so they wouldn't mess with her mindset. Very unfortunately, Flo-Jo retired young. And again, critics said she was dodging drug testing. She mentioned, and she, I don't know, it was an excuse that she couldn't maintain her fitness with constant travel, and her newfound fame meant she had more financial opportunities coming to her. But later, her husband revealed that they were actually trying to start a family. Fair enough, and kudos to them. And she had her daughter Mary, born in November 1990. So they were thinking of maybe she would have a comeback, right? But she had an Achilles tendon injury that had kept her out of contention for the 1996 Olympic Games. And get this. 2 years later, Flo-Jo tragically died in her sleep at the age of 38. So in the autopsy, the cause of death was an epileptic seizure brought on by a congenital abnormality in her brain. So she had this seizure while sleeping face down on her bed and she suffocated. The autopsy also found no signs of steroid use. So that's really sad that in her case, it had to be death and an autopsy to prove her critics wrong. So tragic. Now, Flo-Jo was really admirable because she used her fame. You know that song Jenny from the Block from Jennifer Lopez? Like making a statement that not forgetting where you come from. And that's what Flo-Jo did. She worked with inner city children through her Flo-Jo International Foundation. And she figured out how to cash in when track and field was still pulling the cobwebs off its amateurism rules. She commanded thousands of dollars in appearance fees. And she actually designed two separate fashion lines in Japan. You know, she also designed uniforms for the NBA's Indianapolis Pacers. She wrote children's books. She made guest appearances on TV sitcoms. And she had big contracts, right, with big names like Coca-Cola and Mitsubishi. She also had a Flo-Jo Barbie doll complete with its own one-legged speed suit. So Flo-Jo created a name for herself. She was the first big box office star in terms of track and field. And this is even before anybody had ever heard of Usain Bolt. Now, I have read in certain trader forums, right, when people say, yes, I intended to learn and practice my trading and then life happens. And then they talk about family tragedies that derailed them. And they go, oh, so I wasn't on track as expected. Now, in 1987, Flo-Jo's dad died suddenly. And it affected her deeply. 1987 was the year just before the 1988 Seoul Olympics, where she won all those medals. Her dad just died the year before. So she dealt with her grief and she didn't let it derail her from her goals. In fact, she maintained the focus on her athletic goals, and this required immense strength mentally, as well as the weight that she was lifting in a gym. She was squatting 320 pounds for a 130-pound woman. Think about the mental strength, her spine. She had a spine of steel. And then think about her childhood when her brothers kind of said, hey, if you cry, no more playing. So all these things created the woman that she was to create a competitor that she was. Somebody that every single one of us can learn from. Mental resilience. Emotional flexibility. Flo-Jo was known for her fierce work ethic and determination. She didn't typically make excuses for her performances. Instead, she was known for her focus on training, pushing herself to excel, and constantly striving to improve her skills and speed. So even though there might have been moments where challenges and circumstances affected her performance, she was just really professional. And even though you might think, oh, her outfits don't look very professional, she was professional in the sense that she showed up. The way she showed up to training, working out at 4 a.m., being able to work two jobs and still train. Think about that. I know it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of dedication, but this is sometimes what it takes for you to master something. So really let that set in. And I encourage you guys to go on YouTube and look at clips of Flojo and let that inspire you. Read out more about her and think about how can this apply to the way I approach my trading practice, the discipline, the patience, my own relationship with time. Okay, my friends, I hope you found this episode useful and look forward to hearing the next episode featuring another female athlete next week. I'll see you guys soon. Bye.